the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins.
Mother!
I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Milano pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And it's our first time to catch up in just a little while with the head coach of the Volunteers, baseball Volunteers, that is, Tony Vitello, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Always appreciate the time. When we last spoke, the draft had made its progression through the two nights, and you had had three players selected. This is the first time we've had the opportunity to catch up with you after the free agency period. What was it like to see opportunity come the way of Chase Wallace and Cody Davidson?
I thought it was great, and I mean, our assistant coaches would be the ones to get the compliment of being Nostradamus, but a good draft for a college coaching staff is when you can kind of predict what's going to happen and see into the. We thought those two things would happen, but the manner in which they went down and the fact those two guys kind of had the perfect organizations for them made it a lot better. I mean, Chase Wallace was a guy who was getting calls in the fifth round. He, quite frankly, was probably going to go in the sixth if there was one, but there wasn't. So I could go on and on about the circumstances, but I think it's a great fit with the Royals, and we kind of knew he was going to go and he wanted to go. And then Cody Davidson, TikTok and everything else, has a lot of things involved in his own personal story. And at the end, it ended up being a good one. And both those guys will be Vols for life, but they'll start their pro career whenever the virus lets.
Tony, did you think that there were other guys that maybe are returning to you that didn't end up agreeing to any free agent deals?
Well, Vince, I think it's more about when you get surprised, because kids get emotional on draft day, and it's completely understandable, and I was never in their shoes, but I can only imagine, you know, the emotion of, I've always wanted to play Major League Baseball, or wait a minute, I saw this guy get drafted or signed, and I know I'm better than him. There's just a lot that goes into it, and so you hope to not get surprised or someone panics or makes a decision for the wrong reasons. So, again, I don't think there was really anything through our conversations, because we had a lot of them. And, again, our assistants kind of spearheaded that. I think everyone was on the same page. And I think what was supposed to happen happened. At the end of the day, if there was a reason at all to be sad about the draft, I just feel like Chase Wallace was robbed of, you know, $100,000 or a couple $100,000, which, you know, after taxes, it's money he can make up if he goes out and pitches the way he's capable of.
And it in the end, you really come out with, compared to maybe some other programs, a limited number of losses and a whole lot coming back in your team. What kind of maybe step back have you done in thinking about, I know there's a lot of time and a lot of what ifs moving forward, but what your team might look like now that the dust has settled in terms of the drafted free agents?
Right. Well, big is one thing. And I don't just mean physical from working out with Coach Q. I mean numbers. We've spoken with everybody, and to be honest with you, I've tried to scare everybody a little bit with how competitive it's going to be, but honestly, I'm not recruiting you. I mean, kids like it at our place. They want to be on board with what's going on. And I think they also see the future. Next year is going to be a very good team, like a lot of other college baseball teams, because of this shortened draft. But we're going to lose a ton of players next year, and that's going to open up the doors to playing time for maybe those guys that aren't out there every day this coming year. So there's a lot of different ways you can answer that question, but I think you're right. Some teams really got their signing class blown up in the draft, or some other teams, you know, maybe got hurt by some guys taken in the five rounds that were currently on their team. But, you know, overall, we like what happened. we want to kind of keep the next man up type of approach going on and get our guys rewarded if they deserve to go in the draft, like Zach Daniels. And then if we're doing our good job recruiting, you know, the next Zach Daniels story is awaiting in the wings.
How comforting is it when you have three guys drafted in such a unique draft, one like we've never seen before and like we hopefully will never see again, but the fact that all were taken care of, got the job done, and were able to reach agreements as smoothly and seamlessly, it seemed, as they were.
Yeah, it was great, John. And, I mean, if you compare our program to others in the country, again, it was a super unique draft, but just the fact that the last couple of years we've kind of had the numbers that the quote-unquote big boys in college baseball have has been very impressive. And a side note, which, you don't know if you want to draw attention to it too much or not, but we've had more minority players sign pro contracts the last 3 years than any program in the entire country. So there's a lot to be proud of. But with these three guys in particular that went in those five rounds, and then Cody and Chase, it's just the matchups with what team the guys went with was just phenomenal. Crochet and the White Sox, the Chris Sale comparisons, and he might pitch in the playoffs. Alaric, literally the favorite team was the Twins all year long. They want to try him at second base. Zach Daniels with that short porch in left field for the Astros. I don't know if Zach will be hitting with a buzzer on his jersey or not, but he's going to have a short porch in left field. And then the other two, I could go on and on about. It's just a really cool matchup. It wasn't just drawing out of a hat. These guys went with this team. There was a lot of backstory to it. And it just seems to be five very good matchups for those kids in particular this year.
You and Vince were talking about what returns now for the Volunteers, and we've been seeing and hearing about student-athletes returning to campus. Where are your guys in regards to that in terms of the ability to come back to Knoxville?
It's funny you say that, and I may be being overly honest, but we had one of our guys floating around campus today, so I had to send out a reminder that our facilities right now are off limits to our guys. Now, there are a couple guys that go see Woody, Jeff Wood, our trainer, that are rehabbing, but they do that in the football complex, and they've gone through that protocol of getting tested and then daily temperature checks, wristbands in order to be able to go to certain places. So they're meeting all the criteria that the Chancellor and Coach Fulmer have laid out for us. But the rest of the guys remain kind of waiting for the go-ahead. And, you know, I don't think that's going to happen until late July or August.
Okay.
And hopefully that does go off smoothly so that we can get our guys on campus and get an early start for the fall.
Tony, you're talking about how big the number is, and because they didn't change the scholarship totals that you had, the roster it changed, and they gave you a little bit more leeway, the 25 minimum, things like that. And I know that's a sore subject because it is frustrating for those of us in college baseball, but with all that under consideration, have you already started to have those conversations about maybe tweaking the percentages and how you can make all that work financially for all those kids?
Yeah, they're uncomfortable conversations. So, again, being honest, I've actually procrastinated. I was waiting for your guys' call before I called here. And, you know, we've already alluded to what our plans are for almost everybody, but now it's a matter of executing them. And, Vince, I think it's going to work out about as good as it can. We got an email a couple weeks ago from the SEC office, and it said these five guys have been released from their national letter of intent, and they were all from the same program. And that program basically cut loose five incoming guys, and then they cut loose several guys that were on their roster supposed to be coming back. We've had a few guys with natural attrition right at the end of the season. They thought, maybe I'm not going to play. And we had one guy who was going to go to a junior college and then come right back because he didn't want to sit 2 years in a row. But we haven't cut anybody loose. We're just going to have to make a lot of small, you know, adjustments and deals with people to make the thing work. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to work out, again, about as good as you can make it. Because, I was a scrub walk-on that was given an opportunity. I think every kid should be given an opportunity to show what he can do. And then you know what? If you can't hack it, you can't get through Coach Q's workouts, or you just can't hit SEC pitching, maybe it's time to do something else. I'd be lying if I didn't say it doesn't work out for everybody. But I do want to give the opportunity that we preach about in recruiting or in practice on a daily basis to each guy so he can prove, you know, what he is or what he's willing to do. And I don't care if it's a guy who's going 75 and, you know, will never pitch an inning for us. If he's going to go through all the stuff that we do and be a good teammate, then we always say, we got your back because you got ours. And I think we're going to have a really good group of guys. And we didn't make all the forecasters that are superstar media people in college baseball came out with their Omaha picks for next year already. And we didn't make any of those, but that's good. It'll give us something to work for and be motivated by.
Well, part of that squad is going to be the incoming freshman, your last signing class as well. For whoever you're comfortable discussing, what are some things that, and maybe a few names that stand out about that group that you can share with the Vol fans out there?
Sure. Well, I think there's too many of them to list off. There's a handful of left-handed pitchers that are coming in, and it's the first really good crop of those guys that we'll get, and that's no disrespect to Will, and I think Kirby's going to be great for us, and obviously Redmond's great, and I'm probably leaving a couple up, but, you know, left-handed pitching was very thin when we first got here, and that's why Crochet was a priority. You know, we've got strength and I think quality and quantity with left-handed pitching coming in. You know, Xander Seacrest is one, I'm just going off the cuff, he's a guy that throws from a lot of different slots and kind of is a unique, quirky lefty out there. He really reminds me a ton of Liam Spence's brother. Liam's brother pitched in the big leagues after pitching at Arizona State. And I think Xander has crazy amount of, comparisons or similarities to Josh Spence, Liam's older brother. And then on the right-handed side of the mound, again, there's some guys that are really talented, but Blade Tidwell is a Tennessee kid from Loretto, and I think he's going to make an immediate impact. People saw how well he was throwing the ball right before the draft. And I think he's motivated by the draft because he's one of those guys that saw some names go off the board that he feels like he's better than. So rather than talk about it, you know, be about it. And, several average. I really like the catching that's coming in because Pav's down to 1 year. Jackson Greer's down to 1 year. I think there'll be some names in there that people will fall in love with when they see them play. And, you know, they're going to have to scratch and claw to get in the lineup, but I'm big into getting those guys out there, even if they're not the everyday guys, so they can, you know, take the keys to the car and drive the thing when our older players are done.
Coach, when we last spoke, you were mentioning that there were just a handful of leagues that were going to go ahead and play during the summer. Do you have any players that are playing summer ball?
Yeah, those have shrunk. Those have shrunk, John. A lot of, you know, the Georgia League that was going to go down had several of our guys. We had a bunch of guys going out east. Will Mabry's in a position to pitch with his team. They're supposed to start up in a couple days. But we have not had anyone active in a league that I think you would find internet stats available. Kirby, I mentioned his name earlier, Cannell, he's in a league out east that's just kind of a, I don't want to knock it and say subdivision league, but it's kind of a throw-together deal. And I saw a video of him hitting a triple the other day and rubbing his belly. So I know he's out there playing and having fun, but I don't think that's a league that you guys could track down stats on, especially if he's hitting a triple.
with this being such a unique summer, what has been the connection for Quentin Eberhardt to make sure that guys are doing what they should be doing? It's a great opportunity for guys just to rest up that might have worked a lot of innings. Of course, you didn't have a full season this year, but I'm just wondering, what is it like for Coach Q to be staying up to date with your guys?
Well, Coach Q's been freed up so much that he had his office redone recently, and he is definitely not a fancy office guy. So, you know, COVID has kind of allowed everyone to find some free time and stay busy with other stuff. And he's done some personal stuff. He's moving into a new house, which is awesome. I mean, all of us have really dug roots in Knoxville. and he's gotten a house, redone his office. He, of course, works out every day in the weight room, but it's not surrounded by the guys. So I know he's kind of has that, you know, empty space in his life without the guys being around. And he stays on and posts those workouts for the returning guys. And I think they've kind of, you know, upheld the standards in the weight room as good as they can or as best as they can. It's starting to become the incoming guys we're worried about because we don't get that summer period that they come, learn the ropes a little bit, and it's kind of a grace period into the fall, so it's not such a shock. I've been trying to warn those guys. Q warns them, but I think those incoming guys are going to get a little bit more of a shock than they normally would without being around in the summer because it is a step up in all categories from high school or junior college to SEC ball.
Tony, you mentioned Jackson Greer as an addition to your team as a grad transfer, but the transfer portal looks to be as stacked as it's ever been. But a lot of schools are in that position of having loaded rosters already because of all the circumstances. I'm sure there's good players on the transfer portal. How do you handle keeping an eye on that? How much do you spend time on that? Just in case maybe there is a difference maker out there.
Well, you know, one of these days I'll give you the whole Jackson Greer story. When I first got hired, he scared the living daylights out of me. I walk out of the office late at night, and he's been sitting there waiting for me for like 3 hours to talk to me about coming to Tennessee. So we had some history there. He's a local guy. We kind of swapped out. As soon as Landon Gray said he was going to stick with a great job that he has lined up, we basically did tit for tat, and it made us feel good about getting a local kid that, quite frankly, we wish was in the program for a couple years prior. And he really fits kind of the competitive fighting attitude we have. Now, he was probably that one guy that might have jumped on a contract if it was thrown his way, but he'll be with us next year. And I tell you all those things about him because we've basically cut it off at that. We have, just like every program, a body count problem because of this virus. And it just doesn't seem it doesn't match up with what we're trying to do because I don't want to criticize others. You got to do what you got to do to keep food on the table. But we like our guys. And they're all bought into what we got going on. And basically, we've tried to stay loyal to the guys that we either recruited or have coached. And, you know, that's going to get thrown in their face when they come back in the fall. It just is. I'm just trying to give everyone some insight to what the chalk talk will be like. When we meet as a team, I'm going to remind them that a lot of people have jumped through hoops to make the finances work, the body count work. There are some guys that maybe we could have, you know, said, man, maybe this is an upgrade if we sign this guy out of the portal and get rid of this other guy, and we haven't done it. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know, but I'm Italian and loyalty is a big word to me. And I feel like the coaches have stayed loyal to our guys. But that's going to come with a cost. Cause like I said, that's getting thrown in their face from day one. And, I think it needs to be a part of the equation with how motivated we are next year to kind of finish the business we had started this year, showing everyone that, you know, we belong in the right conversations.
How are the Spanish lessons going?
They've slowed a little bit, John. You know, now that everybody's kind of out and about, I'm still staying with them. I tell you what, I can do the stuff, the writing and reading. Speaking, I probably, you know, I spoke with Ortega yesterday, and he usually throws some stuff at me. He didn't yesterday. If he would have, I would have been lost. But I did speak with Jarrell, and him and Brandon Gila were two guys that were hurt for us last year. Jarrell hit a grand slam today down in the Florida League. That might be one we can forward you some stats to, John. I need to get you the name of the league. I'm sorry I don't know the name of it, but it's really key for those two guys to be playing because Coach Elander nailed it getting those two kids out of Florida. And then no one got to see who they were last year because of injuries they suffered in high school. So, you know, Gilo and Ortega were high school teammates, and they'll be names that everybody's familiar with next year.
Well, we certainly look forward to that, and great to see Tennessee, one, the three players drafted, have as smooth a process as they did in each signing with their respective clubs. Two great opportunities for two very deserving young men via free agency. Coach, we appreciate all the time and the update, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks, Tony.
You bet, guys. You bet. Those guys, they signed for some good money, so free meals need to be coming our way next time they're in town.
Well, Alaric says his goal is to put a Whataburger on campus, which I think is going to have a huge amount of support.
See, yeah, that sounds like him. He's looking to make money, not spend it. So maybe one of those other guys will buy us something.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll see you guys.
And that is Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello joining us via the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. We'll get a break. Sports Talk rolls on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
A real woman could stop you from drinking.
It has to be a real big woman.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And Vince, we've had a lot of fun talking baseball for essentially the last hour, but we've also talked some football, and we're getting ready to do more of that. But we should drop in that Tennessee has announced that it is going to a mobile ticketing system for 2021. So you've got 1920 that we're making our way through. And now when we get to the fall, Tennessee has tried it out, and it is just doing its way, its best to make sure there's as little contact as possible moving forward. But we've seen so many. The Titans went to this a couple of years ago with mobile tickets.
Yeah, and it's growing in college athletics. There's a few companies that are taking the lead on it, and obviously it's not 100% the deal with that, but so many are going to doing a lot more with their mobile phones, with their smartphones, and so it's just something that those that never got into that technology are having to adjust to. But I think for the big picture, it is a solid advancement, and one, especially now with COVID and those things, it makes a lot of sense to speed up that process.
So Tennessee transitioning to mobile ticketing for all ticket options across all ticketed sports for the 2020-21 upcoming academic year. So we will get a break. Vince, we turn our attention to football, and up next we'll talk about Tennessee's opening opponent.
That's right. Charlotte 49ers head coach Will Healy joins us next to break down the opening opponent for Tennessee in 2020.
That's next on Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. And Vince, we go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline for a very special guest.
That's right. He's a head football coach at Charlotte, the season opening opponent for the University of Tennessee in 2020. Will Healy joins us on the show. Hey, Coach. Vince Ferrara and John Wilkerson in Knoxville. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I have the number of times that I've listened to y'all show coming through Knoxville recruiting, it's kind of like, why the heck are y'all talking to me? So I appreciate your time more than you appreciate mine.
No, we do appreciate yours, and thank you for saying that. Obviously, there's so much going on and a lot of different directions we can go. First, from a big picture standpoint, with a lot of your players or players around the country coming back on the campuses for workouts, what's that been like, the way it's been executed at your school?
It's so different. And, I think the hardest part about it for me is not having a chance to be around them. I don't know who's at workouts. I don't know how they're doing. My conversations with our strength coach are, how did the temperature check go and how the questionnaires go? And so it's different. I mean, we're used to being around them, having them at our house and going to play golf with them or taking them on the lake or whatever it may be. And now you're just Are we handling the protocol with how they check into workouts every day the right way? So very different. We got a really good group on campus. I'm excited about what we got coming back, but I miss being around them. And that's the hardest part about it. That's why you're in the profession. And, you know, that's what we're missing out on right now.
How good did you get at Zoom calls?
All right, so honest to goodness, I was on Zoom IT. All right, when I get fired as the head coach, it's not if, it's when. When I get fired as the head coach, I'm going to be the most unbelievable Zoom IT person you've ever seen in your entire life. I have had probably 20 to 25 hours of talking to some Zoom guy who's in like Australia, and you know I'm on the phone call with probably 50 elementary school teachers. And yes, we've got another question from Will. Yes, Will, you can do group sessions this way. You know, so, I mean, Zoom is, when I get fired, I'm going to work for Zoom, and I've got it mastered.
Coach, what was it like to help the 49ers get to a bowl game last year?
Well, I would love to take credit. I inherited a group of players that were ready to do something special and have a really good staff. And so you're sitting there at 2-5 and you're like, good Lord, I mean, how do we find a way to win one more? And next thing you know, you win 5 in a row and, you know, you go play in the Bahamas and learning how to deal with the bowl game experience was different for me. I've been an FCS guy my whole life, and how to prepare for a bowl game, how to sign a class on signing date with the bowl game was a different experience. And so I learned a lot. I failed miserably. We got our rear ends kicked by Buffalo. And, you know, so a tremendous experience being able to take them to the Bahamas. I would say the details of how to handle a bowl game and what I did to prepare these guys was a loss on my part for sure.
I would imagine, though, it had to be really rewarding, as you just talked about, to have an experience like that for the seniors, as well as to have the buy-in that was necessary to make something like that happen in your first year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, part of what you look for as you take a job is, how do I exceed expectations? And one of the great parts about this job is we've never been to a bowl game before. So I feel like that's something that we can continue here, and you know, being able to win the last 5 and make it to a bowl game and provide our seniors with that experience, especially after going 2-5, when you're wondering, are they really going to buy in, or you know, do they really believe in me and our staff, was extremely rewarding. And you know, taking the wives and the kids and all that type, and especially our players on that type of trip, same at Atlantis and you know, all those type of things that we were able to do was really rewarding.
Joined by Charlotte football head coach Will Healy here on Sports Talk and Vince Ferrara with John Wilkerson. And coach, your former Eddie Robinson Award winner for that National FCS Coach of the Year in your time at Austin Peay, and such great success you had there. Describe for our listeners what some of your biggest takeaways from your experience at Austin Peay were to set you up for your opportunity there in Charlotte.
Probably the biggest thing is how ignorant I was when I took the job. You know, as a 30-year-old thinking, hey, I'll just step into this job and you know, we're the 265th ranked job out of 256 Division I jobs, and I'll just step in and we'll win a couple games based on energy. That doesn't really translate really well when you play Troy and all those guys. So I went 0 for my first 13 as a head coach, but I think the biggest thing that I learned was I hired right, and had a bunch of people around me who, even when I was crazy and had no idea what I was doing, and still don't in a lot of ways, had a bunch of people around me who cared about me enough to tell me when I was wrong or when they disagreed, and when we finished the conversation, believed in me enough to go carry on the message. And so, you know, so many mistakes. 4 years as a head coach, 3 years at the FCS level, 1 year at the FBS level. I made so many mistakes last year as an FBS head coach. And so I think that every year you're in it, if you don't feel like you were a complete moron the year before, then you're probably not learning as much as you should. So I've learned I need good people around me to succeed for sure.
You have a lot of talent coming back on offense, one of the better groups in the league, and in a lot of different positions. Victor Tucker, receiver, you got a really good group there. Talk about some of those exciting years for.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we actually had Vince. We lost Vince, so he
tapped
out for just a second.
I was just about to say, they're not giving me the same kind of bill that cell phone bill that Jeremy Pruitt gets, so it may be a little tough out here. We got some really good players coming back, and obviously it's relative. You know, I think that our quarterback we feel a lot better about than we did a year ago. Scrappy, you know, just the type of personality you want to be the face of your program. You know, we run the quarterback a good bit, and he's tough, and he's about 5'10", 195 pounds, and he probably would be wouldn't have been recruited by Tennessee if they would have been looking for guys to help out on the equipment staff. So he doesn't look the part, but there's nobody I'd want to go into battle with more than him. You know, we've got a running back that's a grad transfer from Northern Illinois that in 9 spring practices was everything we could hope he could be and more, and obviously replacing an undrafted free agent running back who rushed for 1,000 yards consecutive years. We got a lot to, a lot of big shoes to fill with the running back position, but I feel really good about the two we got coming back, fifth-year senior and then a grad transfer, Aaron McAllister and Trey Harbison. So all the receivers are back. Vic Tucker had a really good, probably 6-game stretch. I think the question for Vic is, can he be consistent enough to do it against the big dogs, the Tennessees, the Dukes of the world that will play this next season? And then we got to replace 3 offensive linemen that left us as fifth-year seniors that were starters, including a third-round draft pick. So a lot of shoes to fill on offense, but obviously feel very different about it with a quarterback who made a lot of plays for us coming back, knowing our offense and being – kind of the focal point of our football team.
Where were you in regards to going through spring practice when the curtain fell on everything sports related?
We were 9 practices in excited about a big scrimmage on that coming that Saturday. We had a team meeting that Friday morning. I think it was, around the 15th of March, and let them know that, hey, we're gonna suspend this thing for a while and see what happens, make sure we keep you safe. So, then the question was what to do with them going back home and do they leave campus? So a lot has happened since then. I feel like it's been, more like 3.5 years instead of 3.5 months. But we finished 9 spring practices. I know that we finished 4 out of 9 with our defensive coordinator because he had the flu. So I told him he's only getting paid for half a spring ball, and that was me being generous. So if you watch some of our spring film, you would question whether we actually finished 9 practices or not.
Do you have you mentioned that you've got a lot of shoes to fill when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. How healthy were the 49ers in the offseason? Do you have many guys that were either rehabbing or coming back from a surgery?
You know, the scariest part about this whole thing is you have a bunch of guys who have been working out on their own. And kudos to them for it being important enough to go do stuff at, their local park or high school field or wherever they could find concrete, really, even to go work out. And had a couple injuries that way. It's not their fault. It's the concern that I think coaches across the country had for not being able to watch their players and make sure they were doing it the right way and that they were really in shape enough to do some of the things that they were doing. So had a couple of those injuries, but for the most part remained pretty healthy. I think, mentally is probably the toll that it's played on all these guys is as important as anything. And, so making sure that they're in the right state of mind where they feel healthy and confident in what our protocol is and trust us enough to understand that we're going to keep them safe throughout this whole process.
Coach, does that include actual COVID testing across the board, or is it those that have symptoms and the temperature and questionnaire and things like that then are kept off campus and then you follow up with testing there?
Yeah, we're doing COVID testing across the board. And, every time somebody comes back on campus, they get tested. We'll have another group of tests, after July the 4th. That's a big date for us. When these guys get some time away and, I think as much as you want to monitor, are they going home or are they going to go eat dinner somewhere? I mean, you got 75% living in off-campus apartments. So it's great to act like we can put them in a bubble, but we really can't. And so what does the 4th of July look like? And then test them after that to see where we go moving forward for that big July the 13th date, which is really the first time we can be around them. So, yes, we're testing. We're doing temperature checks every day after we test them, questionnaires. Is there anybody who has symptoms enough to test again? I mean, we're making sure that we go above and beyond from a protocol perspective to keep them safe.
Good. We'll talk about the Tennessee game. I don't know if that was already on the schedule when you got there, but what do you think of the matchup with Jeremy Pruitt's Tennessee Volunteers?
I think Coach Pruitt has done a tremendous job. And I think, obviously, what they're doing in recruiting right now is insane. I think that the progress they made, especially the second half of the season last year, is really impressive. And I've always known he was a great football coach. I used to recruit his dad's high school, and so I knew about him, but I didn't really know him. And he may not know who the heck I am, but I look forward to getting a chance to meet him and be around him. And I know he's exceptional at what he does. Obviously, one of the best defensive minds in the game, and I really do. No coach speak, just being a Tennessee guy, I'm impressed with what he's done to bring some life back into Tennessee football. And a really cool experience for me. I mean, I was an assistant at Chattanooga. My wife's actually taking a picture of me standing on the sidelines because I was like, I don't care what the pregame talk is. I'm going to go watch this T thing expand and I'm going to be on the field when this team runs out to run through the tee, because I've been in the stands so many times as a youngster watching it that it was almost like me being, a Tennessee fan my whole life and watching the team run out through the tee and then be like, oh, my goodness, we got to play these dudes here in just about 10 minutes. So it'll be surreal. I think that it's the mecca of college football. I think that I grew up, my dad, uncle, and granddad all played at Georgia Tech, so I grew up a big Georgia Tech fan, but my best friend was a big Tennessee fan, and I'd go to games, and I'd be the first one leaning over the edge asking for T. Martin's wristband and, Peerless Price and Cedric Wilson, and, I mean, I know the history of Tennessee football. Obviously, went to camp as a youngster, 5'9", 149-pound high school quarterback, wondering why the heck Randy Sanders and Philip Fulmer weren't recruiting me. And, then getting in the college game, you're like, you probably weren't good enough, big fella. So surreal moment for me and a tremendous program, huge test for our program. But, if we got any guys that want to play in the National Football League or if you want to put your brand on the national stage, going to Neyland Stadium is a pretty good start.
Yeah, that's awesome. And ironically enough, even with beyond the Tennessee game, with all that history you mentioned, you got David Cutcliffe and the Duke Blue Devils with some other Tennessee history there as well on your schedule. Coach, really appreciate it. Great to visit with you. Thank you for listening to our show and the Sports Animal when you're coming through recruiting. Hopefully you can get back to doing that soon, and look forward to seeing you in Knoxville in the opener.
And the new helmets look
Thanks,
sharp.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I just expect all Knoxville native Tennesseans to be very nice to the fellow native whenever they come back. Okay, so let's play nice.
All right. <Deal. laughs>
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you. You stay
too.
Well. Be safe.
Yes, sir. Y'all too.
Thank you very much. what an enjoyable conversation with the head coach at Charlotte. As Vince, we got to spend some time with Will Healy, and what a great debut to take that program and get to their first ever bowl game.
Absolutely, and using the bowl loss as motivation for next season. But man, to do that in your first year in Charlotte, he's a terrific recruiter, and he's definitely going to have them, you know, at or where they were last year. So. Be a good quality opponent for week one for Tennessee.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back to close out hour number three of Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
The station where winners listen and listeners win. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
We come back to say so long for hour number three of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. And Vince, some recruiting news, a big-time commitment for the Lady Vols, as Brooklyn Miles has said yes to Tennessee. She becomes the third five-star player to join the 21 class from Franklin County in Kentucky. And the number 46 overall player in the country, the ninth best point guard, has committed to Tennessee.
It is an impressive group, work getting done by Kelly Harper and the staff. Now, in the past, there were still some impressive recruiting classes that Holly Warlick put together with a whole bunch of McDonald's All-Americans on that roster. So this is not a guarantee that they're going to have the better results. But it is a necessary step, and if you have the greater percentage of player development with that same high level of talent, that's how you win. That's how you get back into conference championship contention. So it's a necessary piece, and one that clearly Kelly Harper and the staff accomplishing with the Lady Vols right now with those high level recruits.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson. Hour number four of Sports Talk is coming up. We'll bring you comments from Jeremy Pruitt as he joined Dan Patrick on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today. We also have a number of things to talk about, but up next, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6 as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.